Jason won that match against Shane, and Shane's the king, and he went up and stood in his chair. You don't stand in the king's chair.
We're not leaping into the podcast. We leaped and now we're back out.
I thought this was it.
We've just been chatting.
I thought we were on the air, Nate.
The
what
things
are you doing?
That we were talking about.
This took an hour, Nate.
The things that we were talking about cannot go on the podcast. There was a lot of insider news there that we can't. So the fun part about Mike and I is we get to hear a lot of really, really cool, interesting news across the industry, but we get in trouble if we actually say it out loud.
Using drugs and things like that.
Yes, exactly. So
that would get you in trouble. It's like people don't use drugs these days or what? And then that's never happened in a pool hall before.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So this is the fun hypocrisy of pool. Stephen A. Smith breaks the news that LeBron James is going to go to Miami, and he's praised for it. And everybody across the industry, whether you're a player, whether you're in the marketing, wherever you're at, it's a really, really cool thing to be able to break a story like that before it actually gets announced. And in pool, right, if you break a story, you have every single person coming over to you yelling at you because they're not allowed to make their comment on their own or their statement on their own. And I think that that's a weird paradox of pool where it's good and it's bad, right? Because we're not big enough to really warrant having these big insider things that we announce, but we're small enough that we're trying to grow, so it actually has to come organically sometimes where there's not enough of a media following. So the people that are actually making the announcements, it's like a huge marketing thing for them, and it actually has big influence on what happens with their product or their brand or their tournament or whatever it is. It's this weird paradox that and Mike, you've been around the industry for a heck of a lot longer than I have. So I mean, if you wanna say something to that, feel free.
No, I mean, it's true, you know, but I get both sides of it. You know, they want to be able to monitor that needle being moved, right? They want to track those likes and those comments on their page, on their platform, their thing. And, you know, so you have somebody like, you know, you or me come along, go and break something, you know, and then that needle is not going to be moved as much on their end, you know? So, I can understand that, but I try to just play that fine line. I'm usually okay to go and say it for the most part, unless I get specifically told otherwise. But, you know, at least when it comes to me, like, people know what I'm going to do, and I get told stuff specifically for that. So, you know.
But, it's this weird paradox. But neither here nor there. Rob, what's up? How's it going? Here we are, another podcast.
Well, there's nothing more to talk about now.
Oh, there's plenty more to talk about. You stop it. And we're joined by Melina Mike. What's up?
How are you, buddy? Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course.
I really enjoy listening and, you know, hanging out with you guys on here.
Yeah, Demetrius is on vacation with his family. So we will start out with
into the podcast today? I don't want to jump.
Okay, we'll slide into the podcast today. But first, we got to do our announcements in the beginning. Just as a general reminder, there has been a few things on the podcast discussion page in the last couple of days, as well as people reaching out to me individually. If you are interested in a new cue, new shaft, I mean, really, really any billiard product, and you want to help support the podcast, basically we can get you anything that you want in the billiard world. And generally speaking, we can actually get it for a pretty decent discount off of what is retail. So if that is one way, especially if you're going to buy the stuff anyways and you would like to help support the podcast, that is one way that you could definitely do it. Another way, of course, I will give the reminder, we are also a vendor for Jacoby Custom Cues. So if you're ever interested in any Jacoby products, we can get you a little bit better discounts on those. So just as a general reminder out there for some people who may be looking at new cues anytime soon, or maybe just a new shaft or anything like that, we can generally get you just about whatever you need in the pool world if you're interested in ordering through the podcast. Secondly, again, we are still going to be opening up to third-party sponsors. We have one currently with the Break Rack, And I mean, I'm actually really, really excited for that one, because anybody who's been around the podcast for a long time knows that I really, really love that product. So to be able to actually bring them into the Cue It Up family and help them push their product, I love it. So definitely want to check that out if your break needs some work. But bringing it back full circle, if you own a business or know somebody who does, and they are interested in sponsoring with the podcast, please reach out to me at cueitup.com podcast@gmail.com or at cueitup.podcast.com or through the Facebook or any social media pages. All right, that's everything to get cleared up in the beginning. We can jump into our shout outs now. As the guest of the podcast this week, Mike, would you like to go first?
So I got a couple buddies of mine who are fans of the show, and they didn't know that I periodically go and join in. So I'm going to give a shout out to my buddy Juan and my buddy Tony. They really enjoy it, and they had been listening for quite some time, and then one day I popped up, and they were like, Mike, is that you? And I was like, yeah, man, Nate's a good guy. So shout out to them, doubly listening, so that way they won't give me any, they won't be busting my chops later on about it.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. And you need to pick new friends. Mike's a crazy guy.
Well, that's kind of a defensive shout out.
That is defending kind of a defensive
your position
shout out, isn't it?
For the future. Those are the things you do when you're married.
I'll trust me. I do plenty in the marriage too.
Actually, speaking of marriages, I Rob, I'm gonna have to go second. I got a shout out to my wife. This is our 6-month anniversary right now. Today.
Oh, Alicia!
Congratulations! Oh. What are you doing on a podcast then right now?
Well, she's at work. She's out working, so she can sustain this household. I just sit at home play video games and podcast all day.
Yeah, she's the person in the marriage that actually has a job, a real job.
Hey, buddy, in my defense, our finances are 100% separated. We do not give each other money at all.
So that means you have nothing and she has it all.
Well.
I understand, Nate.
All right, Rob, you go ahead. My shout out to my beautiful, loving, caring, financially supporting wife.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know.
Okay, well, I'm gonna do a marketing shout out. It's kind of like, since I don't have my own coach's corner, I'll kind of do it this way. And I'm really not marketing myself. I just happen to be the one that's going to do these things. But if anybody out there in pool playing land, I have a friend named Andy Buczkowski, who I'm shouting out to, for having the nuts to have a 9-ball put on a tooth that I made for him. In other words, he needed a new tooth, and he went to his dentist, and he said, well, I want you to send this tooth to a friend of mine, and he's going to put a 9-ball on the face of this tooth. It wasn't a front tooth, like right in the front. It was kind of halfway toward the back. Dennis thought he was out of his mind. Says, Andy, you're crazy. What do you mean? You want to? He says, yeah, no, I do. Go ahead, just do it. So he did, and I made the tooth for him, and he's got, when he smiles and real big, you can see a 9-ball on his first bicuspid on the right side. And so what I'm doing is today is, if somebody actually wants something like that done, and honestly, I would say forget the back of your mouth. Put it right in the front. And a 9-ball is really the best ball to put on a tooth, because it kind of, in a way, because it's got white and yellow in it.
Are you saying those are natural colors already?
It doesn't really look so crazy. It looks like, the person, you smile, and if it's a front tooth, you think, well, he's got a little piece of food stuck there, and then you look a little closer and go, my God, it's a 9-ball. See, if you have an 8-ball put on, which, of course, stands out like a sore thumb, well, then, you know, that looks pretty strange. But a 9-ball or maybe the 1-ball or some other ball. Anyhow, I can do this. I could paint a pool table on a tooth if you want it. And these are hand-painted. They're not stencils. They're not done by a machine. And they're permanent.
Okay, so this there's a lot of places I can take this, but I first have to say, because I don't think you've actually ever said what you do for a career while you're
semi-retired. I live for a living.
Yeah, you're semi-retired, but you do make teeth. I mean, that's what you did for your career. You make teeth.
Yeah, I've been making teeth for 48 years.
Yeah, so that's where we got to start it. But now this begs the question, and I just can't pass this out.
This is for pool players only. I mean, I don't want it just like the wife of a pool player to put a 9-ball on her tooth. That would make no sense, or would it?
I don't know.
I have a friend, honest, here. I have another friend, a shout-out friend. I'll shout out next week to this friend, but he had a lower bridge put in. Right? That's 3-unit bridge, 3 teeth. And he wanted it to say no fear on the first 2 teeth, and then the last tooth would have a picture of a 9-ball. So that's what I did for him. So when he pulls back his cheek and shows you, his teeth say no fear 9-ball. And
I gotta see this.
I mean, with people getting tattoos and stuff all over their bodies, you think, you know, why not a tattoo on a tooth?
All right, so Rob, you need to take a picture of this. You need to send it to me so I can get this out on our social media page so people can see what they're talking about.
I have a picture.
Okay, send it to me.
Of Daffy Duck on a tooth. Okay, and I will send that to you.
No, I want the 9-ball.
Well, but I don't have any pictures of those. But I did take. What are you doing? I had a request from a lady to put Daffy Duck on a lower molar, and I did it. And I thought, well, I'm taking a picture of this. I just got to her. And nobody else will ever see it except her friends when she shows them. You know, so I don't have a picture of a 10-ball or a 9-ball. But they turn out really good. The 9-ball turns out great.
I had a really interesting question that I was going to ask you, and then I forgot what it was. So bummer.
Yeah, you'll remember it someday.
I may. Who knows?
My shout out is to anybody that has the Haywards to go ahead and have this done. Someday maybe I'll be playing pool in a pool hall someplace. Maybe I'll follow Austin Hill around for a year, and I'll see a guy breaking the balls and make the 9-ball and have a big smile, and there'll be a 9-ball in his front too.
Well. Just maybe.
Yeah. That's whatever. Wild. So
I want to cue it
up. If anybody wants it done, they can get a hold of me.
I want to cue it up. Cue it up. Tooth. Who out there? Who's a super fan of the show and wants to get a cue it up front tooth? How cool would that be?
Oh yeah, I could put the logo on a tooth. It'd be kind of tiny, but I could do it.
Mike, you gonna do that?
I think like a portrait of you, Nate, would be better.
Draw me like one of your French girls?
I gotta see this before I go making a commitment. I know that.
Yeah, that can be done. But they do it with a laser, and they print it. They'll scan a picture, and they can put it on a tooth. I don't have the machinery to do that. The stuff I do is just by hand. It's freehand, you could say. Like pottery art.
Who'd have known that you were an artiste?
Yeah, just, you know, it's like what you do with a china plate when you paint the designs on them and then bake them. It's the same process, only with a tooth.
Well, wouldn't
you know? I thought you could do that with a pool cue also, I think.
I got nothing. That was an interesting conversation. I was not expecting to have that one today. All right, well, there's our shout-out. How are we going to go into the podcast today, Rob?
Well, we just, can we slide? Yes, let's slide into it. Let's slippery slide into this baby.
It is opening day for baseball, technically speaking. It is opening day for baseball. That's kind of sliding.
Yeah.
I can take it. All right, I can dig that. All right, let's slide into the podcast. We are going to be talking about the One Pool Sports TV Predator 10-Ball Challenge match, because that's what's happening right now, and it's happening on Facebook and YouTube, and it's free, which is also pretty cool. And I guess just talking about the format really quickly, it is a race to 60 points between two players who are playing remotely. Each break is worth 10 points unless you break and run without taking ball in hand, and then you get a bonus 5 points. If you miss at any point in time, you get credit for all of the balls that you have made up to that point. So if you break and take ball in hand, the most you can get is 10 points for that rack, and if you miss the 7 ball and you have the first 6 down, you get 6 points. So it is a race to 60 points, best 2 out of 3 sets. And I guess that, I mean, there's a bunch of more smaller details, but that's generally the idea of the match. And there are 32 players from around the world that is playing in this. And we are officially down to the final, I guess, 6 players, I think. Yeah, down to the final 6 players. On one side of the bracket, there is Fedor Gorst versus Tyler Steyer. That's going to be happening in the semifinals. I believe that is going to be Saturday. And then on the other side, there is Eklanti Kachi playing against some guy's name that I don't even have a chance of pronouncing, but I am going to try it anyways. It is Gialorakis. We'll go with that. Gialorakis. All right. So that is one of the quarterfinals that's happening, and the other quarterfinals is Albin Ocean versus Jeffrey DeLuna. So those are the 6 players that are left. Of the players that were in this. So this format had just a bunch of monsters in this. It had players like Dennis Grabe, Oscar Dominguez, Thorsten Holman, Ralph Souquet, Jason Shaw, of course, all the players that are still left. Plus, there was Alexander Kazakis, David Alkaidi, Dennis Grabe, Francisco Sanchez Ruiz, Conrad. There was a lot of really, really great players in this tournament. And it's down to about the final 6, and it actually is done for today. For full disclosure, we are doing this on July 23rd, so the matches will start up tomorrow. And unfortunately, this is all being streamed, I believe, from Spain. So the early morning matchups are really, really early. But now that they're down to the final, I guess, final few players, they are moving them to more of the afternoons in the the mornings in the U.S. So you have a chance of watching it. I guess we'll start with you, Mike, because you've been watching quite a bit of this. What are your takeaways from this match thus far?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, the ghost playing has kind of been a little played out, you know, for the most part. But this tournament in particular, I'm loving it. I mean, I'm absolutely loving it. Besides the caliber of players that they have in the field itself, the format makes it really exciting, right? Because you dry break. Well, now that's your inning. You're done. You know, so even if you have a lead, it's not safe for very long. You can't get a ball down. You know, whereas if you play the ghost, okay, you scratch, you still can take ball in hand and run out and all that good stuff. You know, so the break is really important. For the most part, a lot of these guys have had, you know, pretty decent angles on their table. Commentary has been great. Shout out to you, Nate. I know you were real giddy about doing it with Margaret the other day. You guys did a great job. But no, I mean, the format, you know, you can be up by 15 points, and it really puts pressure, right? It really gets guys, they know all the eyes are on them. And when you're down, you know that, hey, I have to break and run. And it's not like when you're playing, you know, like a normal tournament per se, where you can go and duck and play safe. Like, we're watching these guys go and fire because they have to. They don't, they're done, you know? So I'm seeing, you know, one pocket cross side banks. I'm seeing, you know, combos and caroms. I'm seeing a lot of exciting stuff throughout this whole event. And yeah, it's all due to the format, which I'm absolutely a fan of, without a doubt.
Yeah. And it really offers some really neat opportunities at some strategy. So you were not able to watch the Thorsten and Tyler match today, but Rob and I were watching it, and you get down to the finals, and Tyler won the first, I think he won the first points, maybe 60 to 35 or something like that, pretty comfortably. And then it gets down to the second one, and Tyler is sitting at 55, and Thorsten is sitting at 47. He breaks and makes a ball, and is hooked on the one ball. He has the break advantage, or the break disadvantage, I should say, which meant that he was actually shooting before Tyler. So he actually had to, if Tyler were to get out on his next turn, so the following rack, Thorsten would have to also get out, or he loses the match. He does not have an opportunity. So he, I guess, going to the broader strategy that you could actually look at here, he had an opportunity to try to jump the one ball in and run out and get over the 60 points he needed to, or he could take his ball in hand and try to get to 57 and hope that Tyler didn't break and make a ball in, or broke and maybe the one was tied up or something like that and wasn't available. And he elected to just take his 10 points, which he did get. So we got to 57 or 58. And then Tyler broke and made two balls and had, you know, just took ball in hand and got his last three balls to get to 60, and he lost. So I think there's some really interesting strategies. And Thorsten said afterwards that he still think that he made the right decision. And I mean, I feel like I have to disagree with that. But this is the fun part of being able to actually talk about these things. I take the jump shot there. I think you have to take the jump shot and hope that you make it and get shape, because Tyler's breaking the ball so good. He's not gonna break dry twice in a row, which he had just done. So he kind of left one out there on the table, and Tyler took advantage of it and ended up getting out of the rack.
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to go and say it like afterwards, right? Because you can play Monday morning quarterback, you know, all the time. We saw it, I think it was yesterday with Jason's match in DeLuna, where there was a long back cut on the one and the cue ball was up table. You know, they were, he shot and missed it, but it was definitely well within Jason's range. But Jason needed to be that aggressive in order to stay in the match. And, I mean, I get it, but it's like, you know, had Thorsten not gotten the 10, right, then he still would have been stuck. You know, he would have been at 47 and for sure would have needed to break and run, because you're not going to bank on Tyler breaking dry twice in a row, right? So, I mean, there's definitely some strategy involved. The only thing that, if I have any kind of critique for this tournament that I guess kind of made me scratch my head a little bit, was that these commentators are like talking about the strategy, right? But the players can hear them. Like, that adds pressure, you know? Like, it can be kind of a coaching aspect, because you see him kind of like, you know, pause for a second and kind of like, you know, second guess themselves. So that'd be the only thing that I would, you know, maybe go and change. But, it's exciting stuff. And, you know, we're seeing him going, and it really makes the guys shoot. That's what I love about it, you know. And all these guys have a chance, and they can all rack the balls well, and they're playing with, you know, templates. And you get to see somebody like Damianos, who, you know, has been out of Greece and kind of the third wheel when it comes to the Greek players behind besides Alex, of course, Nick Malai. So and Damianos was coming last year, so it's really great to see him go and get a shot and make it as far as he has. And I tell you, I mean, he's playing plenty next, but if anybody watches his match with Alex, you know, Damianos has as good a shot as anybody does. He was breaking the balls really well. He had a lot of 15, he had a lot of 10s. And it's good to not only see, like, you know, your top two players like your Shaws and your, you know, Kachis of the world, Albin. You know, the guys who we're used to seeing, but then you have somebody like Damianos, who, you know, beats one of the Polish guys, who's a monster in his own right, and then does what he did to Alex, and that was, for my money, one of the more exciting matches. I lost money on it, actually. I bet on Alex. But, it's great, man. It's really fun. And, I mean, I still love tournament play, obviously, but given the circumstances and, you know, the state of the world that we're in right now, it's great to see something, and something that's actually exciting, because normal ghost play, at least for me, just, I don't know.
It's so. Definitely the best of a bad situation, given what we have available to us right now.
Yeah, and they're doing a good job. I mean, everything about it, I mean, besides, you know, there's some lags here or there, but for the most part, I mean, everyone's doing a really solid job, and,
And it's a completely free event.
I want to see more players jump in.
Yeah. You know? And it's a completely free event. It's been an absolute pleasure. And getting to see some of the earlier players that a lot of players, like you said, that we don't necessarily know about or not really familiar with. So, I mean, it's kind of cool to see that, you know, even maybe down the depth charts a little bit in Greece, they still have a lot of really great players to offer up, you know, in events like this. So that's pretty cool. So, Rob, you watched go ahead.
No, I would say it really showcases like how deep the European talent pool is, right? Because you have those guys who just rise to the top and who are Moscone Cup contenders, but you don't realize like how many guys are like right there at their heels, you know, that are coming for them. So, I mean, Alex made the team last year. I mean, again, this was just one event, so I'm not going to go on and make it more spectacular than what it was, but it was great, you know, and it just, it shows how many, how deep that pool is to go and choose from, for the European side. So,
yeah, for sure. So
I think it's possible that pool's taken a step forward during this pandemic. I mean, you can't watch a professional football game streamed, for the last 3 months. And I've been watching pool for 3 months, you know, because thankfully for individuals like you guys and some other, you know, companies and so forth that are pressing and the individual players who have stepped forward and, you know, said, okay, I'm going to jump into this, especially with the Cue It Up Cup stuff. You know, everybody there was a volunteer. Yes. All those great players, they were just all volunteers. And so I don't think pool's gone backwards at all in the last 4 or 5 months. I think it's stayed at least even, maybe even encouraged by all the individual efforts. Maybe even it's taken a step forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a pool nut, so of course I'm going to be a little bit different than the general population, but I really, really do miss big events. Like, I would love nothing more else in the world right now than to be able to watch the World Pool Masters or the World Cup of Pool or the U.S. Open or the International Open or, you know, it's just some major big event. I'd even settle for, like, the Texas Open or something like that. I mean, just some big event where we get to see.
Hey, I'm from Texas, man. Come on. Texas is going to be great this year if they have Texas, it.
September 1st through the next 7th is the Texas Open, I believe?
Yeah. Right now, Skinny Bob's is who hosts it every year. It's the longest consecutive winning tournament in the entire country. So that's something really huge and why they've held off canceling it, right? Because they don't want to break that tradition. So the owners are new, the Sanders, and they took all the gold crowns in there and they bought a bunch of diamonds and they're really making the place nice. They've been spending the last few months remodeling it and now they're adding one pocket, which I love. Yeah, it's going to be big. And now, especially with Turning Stone being canceled, if, you know, somehow, some way the Texas Open can stay on, it'll probably be the biggest tournament of the year, you know. So we'll see. I hope so, though. Yeah. But I'm like you, Nate. I'm a nut, and I want to go and watch, man. I want to, whether I'm watching online or I'm watching in person, you know, I want to see players in the grease, you know. So
yeah, I want to be able to sweat the matches. Where you have some safety play back and forth, and you're trying to outmaneuver your opponents and stuff like that. But
right.
Yeah, so I mean, I really, really miss one. I miss a tournament like that. I really want to see one of those. But this has been really well ran, and I'm really excited to still be able to watch some pool. That's not a rerun, of course. And I mean, hats off to the organizers of this event. It's been a really cool event, and it's a nice breath of fresh air, I guess, to be able to get a little bit of pool content still with the top players.
I particularly like the point system
on
it, that there's a different ways of getting to your final number. And that adds the element of suspense and it adds the element of critical choice into the game, as we saw in the last game of the last
match. Pressure too.
Yeah, very much so. So you have some, you know, some different ways to go about the right guy, take a chance on this. And I want 15 points this time. I don't want 10. Well, gee, now what do I do? You know, how do I manage this? And all those mental images that the viewer can kind of imagine in his own head. Okay, how is he going to go about this? How is he going to do that? Even without commentation of any type, you know?
Yeah. And as much as I love tactical play, because I'm a one pocket fan.
Okay.
You know, what we love, well, I mean, what I love is watching these guys go and fire balls, right? So you're not going to get that tactical play when it comes to this event. You know, now you can have decisions, you can have a strategy and all that, but
right.
When you're able, you know, you have to go and fire. And so that's the part that I'm loving the most, because rotation, especially and you see guys at a top level, right? They play so well. All those guys can go and run 6, 7, 8 balls, you know, and they get perfect shape and they can be kind of boring. But like when the heat's on and like that situation with Thorsten and Tyler, like you're talking about, I mean, we would have loved to see him go and jump that ball, you know, and fire and take the risk and take a chance, you know. And but you see that more often than not. You see guys go and take a lot of risk. You know, you saw just exciting shots, and that's what will add just that much more of a level of intrigue when it comes to a rotation event.
Yeah, intrigue. I like that. That was a nice line.
We don't have like the Matchroom spotlight, right? Because Matchroom does such a great job of like presenting rotation pool to us, right? But we don't have that when it comes to an event like this. But they make the best of it because of the format of it. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
Because you know the game of like 9 ball and 10 ball can be kind of boring. You just throw a stream on some random ball. People don't know who they are. They may not tune in. But Matchroom, the way they do it, it's genius. Now you throw in this event, you keep the pressure on the players. It keeps them having to go and pot the ball. And that's the part that I'm loving it, man. I really, really am. And I'm not just saying it because I'm starved for bold, because I don't mind critiquing something if I'm not a fan of it. But, no, I'm really enjoying it. They really did an outstanding job. And not just that, like, coordinating, getting everybody together. I mean, hell, it's so hard getting people on the same page at the same time. And so for everyone to kind of,
it's a lot of fun
trying to coordinate.
I hear the sarcasm, we'll just leave it at that.
it's a lot better than I make it sound. I mean, it's still rewarding knowing that you're putting out a really cool product that people want to see. So right. Yeah,
but it's difficult is my point, right? So like that's also great. Yeah. Everyone's coming together.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
Yes.
So I think why don't we take a look at the last 6 players and kind of give our predictions for who we think's going to eke out the win from this. So do we have any volunteers to go first?
Yeah, sure, I will. It looks like Damianos is going to be playing Tachi. And like I mentioned earlier, I mean, everyone's going to go and pick Tachi, right? He's a monster, and a monster at 10 ball. And when his break is down, it's beautiful to see. I mean, we remember him running, you know, 8 in Arizona on Alex. You know, everyone's seen that. And that kid's super dangerous when it comes to whenever he's got that open layout. And he's very poised and composed and tactical. He pockets balls really well. But Damianos is hungry, man. And I'll tell you what. Seeing him play against Alex, he knew what he had to do, and it wasn't going to be just taking ball in hand. He was taking a lot of difficult routes and getting there, or if not getting close, and his break was pretty good. I'm excited to go and see him. And I'd imagine a player like that, because it really is his time to go and shine, right? And the whole pool world is going to be watching. So he's a player like that. I really want to see that matchup because he's hungry. He wants to be Tachi. He wants to show people that, hey, I should be in the mix. I should be considered. I should be in that same spotlight with all these guys. So I think it's going to make for a really good matchup. Besides him being, you know, on paper, the overwhelming favorite, I think Damianos is going to give plenty of a run for his money. And then I think on on the bottom side, it's going to be Alvin versus Jeff. I heard that Alvin's match with David was really exciting. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch that matchup, but a buddy of mine told me that Alvin's break was pretty good. And it better be, because I know Jeff can rack the balls, and
he's got both Jeff's those balls right in the side pocket. Yeah. Those head balls go into that side pocket, both of them. And he's usually making one of the four railers.
Yeah. I mean, his break was strong, and not like the Luna's strong, right? Because he's not powering like we're used to seeing.
Yeah, he's not hitting him at 38 miles an hour.
He was very smart, and his break was like at that medium slow pace, but it wasn't. The balls were coming down, and like Nate said, four railers were going. The wing, the side balls were going in the side pocket, and yeah, Jeff's gonna be very dangerous. Last night, I told my buddy, I think it's gonna be Jeff and Tyler in the finals, and Fader was my buddy, And I love watching that kid go and shine. But, yeah, Jeff's going to be really, really tough. And after beating Jason, and Jason's known to have, one of the best, like, top five 10-ball breaks on earth, you know?
So, I don't think you're going to find too many people argue with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really good matchup, but I kind of favor the Bull, you know? So, if he can keep that break down, Jeff's going to go rack up points, man, you know? But Albin's very European, you know? He's got an open table. He's going to get there. He's going to play smart. He's going to get perfect shape and, you know, not take too many flyers. But and Albin's a winner, you know? He's a world champion. He's a World Cup of full champion. I mean, he knows what it takes. And being this deep in there, you know, he's got that killer instinct. The one thing I like about Albin's game, more than majority of the Europeans, is his composure. You know, if you ever watch him go and play and watch him in big moments, like,
yeah,
even if he misses, he keeps himself together really well. Now, sure, if you watch him, you know, if you watch him on a side table away from the camera, you know, you might hear a curse word here and there whenever he messes up, but, you know, he's very presentable. And, yeah, he's strong mentally for sure. And he's a world champion. He's got a lot of accolades, and I'm sure, you know, this being the first event, and we don't know what's going to happen in the world, right? This may be the first of many. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope, you know, things get back to normal, but
I don't think we're going to see normal for a little while yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, I mean, how cool would it be to win the first one, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I think these guys are going to be hungry, and now they're closer now. So,
yeah. What I like about this event, really, is it's the offensive character of the format.
Exactly.
I mean, this is all you. It's the meat and potatoes of pool. No touchy feely going on here. And that brings out the strengths, I think, in these players. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool format.
So it sounds like you have the Bull and you have Tyler Steyer in the finals. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, I think, I mean,
so who do you think Tyler's sneaks up it
against
out then?
Tyler's up against it when it comes to Fedor. I mean, everybody knows how strong that, you know, that kid plays. And there's few people who root for Fedor the way that I do, man. I'm really a big, big fan of him. Fedor's 10-ball break is amazing. And he can get out. I mean, he can get out. But Tyler right now, man, I don't know, man. He's just, his break is just, it's suffocating is what it is.
He's playing six,
you know, and whenever you're going and playing in a format like this and you got a killer break like the way Tyler does, I mean, it's going to keep that fire on, you know, and it's going to make sure that Fedor's going to feel that pressure too, right? Because he's not going to take him for granted, because now Tyler's not like he was 2 years ago, right? You know, he's not coming out of nowhere where the guys think, it's a walkover. No. Especially in 10-ball. You know, Tyler won the Kremlin Cup. That's the European event, not the 10-ball event. So, I mean, everybody knows now. So, they're not going to take him for granted, and rightfully so. And the kid has earned it. I mean, Tyler absolutely has earned his place in the 10-ball world, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to keep that fire on Fedor, and I think it's going to be a really good matchup. And I hope I'm wrong, because I'm more of a fan of Fedor's than I am of Tyler's. And I don't respect Tyler at all, but... yeah, I think Tyler's gonna win it, man. I think Tyler's strong right now. He really is.
All right, Rob. Do you want to to go next on this one?
Is it possible for Tyler to meet up with DeLuna in the finals?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that's who I say is going to be in the finals. And
so fun. You pick the same ones as me.
And I give it to Tyler.
Are you two like coordinating with your thoughts?
And I'm not giving it to Tyler. I'm from what I saw today when I watched him break, I thought that, I mean, four balls a couple of times he makes, three a lot of times, two almost every time. And, you know, and the only time that he broke dry, or the one time that he broke dry, two balls were going in, and because the cue ball drifted just a hair more over, it blocked the one actually from going straight in the corner, and then it blocked another ball from going in the side. So, yeah, I just think he is – Tyler, to me, in the last couple of years, has become more of a finite, precise player. He was always pretty precise with his CTE and the way he aims and things and the way he was taught and learned. But even more so in the last couple of years, he's really refined his cue ball control. And I just like his game more now. I like his game more every time I watch him play. So he's not just, it's a gradual thing. He got great quickly, and now he's just refining the status where he's at. And DeLuna, I think, is in a lot of the same characteristics. Not quite as fast onto the scene, you know, I don't think, but also, they're all tremendous players, these six guys that are left.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I haven't taken away anything from any one of them, but, those are the two I think are going to be in at the end. I don't think I'm letting the fact I know Tyler and have actually taken a CTE lesson from him interfere with what I'm my projection. I'm trying not to do that, but the fact that he's a Wisconsin player and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I know for sure I'm not. I can say that. I'm not saying you're being a homer at all, but I know I don't. And
yeah,
even knowing Tyler, you know, as little bit as I do. And as good of a kid as I think he is, that's not the reason why I'm saying it at all. I mean, it's for how he's performing, you know, lately, how he's performing today and yesterday. And
he's on the way up.
He's earned it. And you know, it's plain and simple. He's earned it. And he's worked his ass off for it, yeah. You know, and it shows. So.
All right. Well, I hate to ruin your guys' little love fest you had going there, but I got to tell you, you're both wrong. And
you're
both wrong.
You're taking Fedor, aren't you, to win?
I am not taking Fedor to win, but I am
really
taking Fedor to get to the finals, and yes. I have Jeffrey DeLuna beating Elbin Ocean, and I have Eklanti Kachi winning, and then I have Eklanti Kachi beating Jeffrey DeLuna to get to the finals, and then I have Eklanti Kachi beating Fedor in the finals. I'm telling you what this.
Oh, so you're taking.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't bet against that. Wow, there's no way.
Go out on a limb there.
Oh man, yeah. I'm telling you, man, Eklanti Kachi, this dude is a breakaway, and both of them, him and Fedor, if either one of them had Tyler's break, we would be talking about Efren Reyes getting the Wild Four from either of those players. I mean, those guys are just—they do not miss balls ever. They just never miss balls. The only thing that holds either one of them back is having that elite. Like best of the best break shot. I watched Eklanti play yesterday, and I watched him miss exactly one ball in about 16 racks. The dude just never misses balls, and his cue ball is always where it needs to be, regardless. And he's got all the swagger and the confidence in the world. Tyler also actually has that a lot too. I see that with those two players a lot, where they're supremely confident on everything that they're going to be doing. And Tyler does, and I've been arguing for the last, I don't know, maybe 3 months on this podcast, saying that Tyler Steyer has the best break in the entire world for my money. And I stand behind that. But what I think that Tyler has as an advantage over Fedor in the break department, I think Fedor has a bigger advantage in just the cueing power over Tyler. So, I mean, unless Tyler's going to break and start taking ball in hand more often, or taking ball in a hand less often. Today he basically took it no matter what, unless he was like just dead nuts perfect on it. I think Fedor's gonna be getting a lot of 15s, and I think it's gonna really require Tyler to actually have to just try to shoot the one ball in from wherever it's at, and put himself in a little bit tougher of situations. So
it might be the best match of the tournament. The next one.
I think it might be too. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I will not be missing either of those matches. I know that. But I have Eklanti Kachi beating Fedor narrowly in the finals. Is my prediction.
Not a bad prediction at all. Not bad.
If they are playing, I'll be rooting for Beto. That's for sure. But Clemmie, Strom, and Dave, they're all great players, man. And, you know, it's – I'll tell you a funny story. So when Roberto was playing Justin, a pretty well-known state course tour on a thread on my page, we were talking about how great Justin is after the break. And guys started tripping in about, you know, Sky and Shane and all those. And a guy who is serious about his money chimed in and said, let's let Tyler go and break for Justin, and then we can go and dance with Shane all night long. So, and that's a credit to how well Justin's pocketing balls and how well Tyler's breaking right now. So,
yeah.
And Fedor, and I say I haven't watched a lot of Clemmie's matches because of the time differences. But yeah, I mean, everybody knows what a killer he is. And they're going to be great matches. I'm really, really looking forward to them. But I agree that Fedor Tyler one, I think the winner's coming out of there.
So I guess we can leave this discussion there, and I think we beat that one into the ground pretty well. Next week we will cover the conclusion of this, and we'll talk about how right I was, because I don't know. I just feel like I'm going to be right. Who knows? Or we'll talk about how stupid I am and how smart you guys are. Or we'll talk about how stupid we all are and none of us have any idea. And next thing you know, Albin.
Well, if I want to find out that, I'll just call Alicia.
Ah, I see what you did there.
And
don't laugh at that. That wasn't funny.
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty good.
All right, fine. It was okay. All right, we will move on to our upcoming events. So we are going to talk about an event that has been announced, and we'll talk briefly because there is no date for it yet or even a location for it. But we do have confirmation that Roberto Gomez and Chip Compton are going to be playing a one pocket matchup, and it's going to be a race to 24. We don't have any other details besides that, but I guess the only other details is when it's going to happen and where it's going to happen. So, Mike, you have maybe a little bit more insight to that, but you don't have to give any of that here. So we will.
Well,
I guess
I'll say that Ray is really trying to get a venue, and just like we're all disappointed with everything going on, we're all understanding of why things are happening the way they are. Yeah, there's some obstacles to be had, and Ray's kind of a germaphobe. So yeah, it'll happen soon though, from what I'm hearing, that sometime in the middle of August is what they're looking at. So but location-wise, still up in the air. But we'll see. It's going to be a great matchup, and it's going to be for cash and a lot of it, from what I hear.
Yep.
That's exciting. I like that. The more the cash. It's kind of...
Yeah.
What's the biggest game ever? There was a guy who sponsors billiard tournaments out in New York, Long Island, New York, whatever. They had that $100,000... billiard tournament last year, private thing. Okay. You just invited like 10 guys from around the world, the top 10 best or whatever. But what's the
three-cushion?
What? Yeah, it was three-cushion, yes. And he had tables made special with cameras in the tables, in the pockets, and sensors and things. Nice. So, oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah, this guy was – it was quite the deal out there for three-cushion. But anyhow, my question is, what's the most you've ever heard of somebody – two guys button heads for?
Didn't Mike Siegel and Efren Reyes, wasn't that the Tournament of Champions or whatever that was called, wasn't that for 200,000? Where Efren won 198, I believe.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. For the $1 million match.
Or was that $1 million match?
Yeah, with him and Earl, I think.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I'll tell you this. The last...
Wow.
The last, like, 2.5 weeks, it's been, like, the action room at Derby out there at Griff's, from what I've been hearing. And there's been a lot of big games going on. I mean, a lot. And a lot of guys have been out there some rotation, too, but a lot of one pocket. And it's been huge. I know of a certain fellow. I heard that he won a little over $1 million last week. And,
playing one pocket, $1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't want to play him.
No. Well, I mean,
or maybe he was getting, like, maybe he only had to go to 4. The other guy had to go to 12.
Oh, well, there's a few guys who only have to go to 4. they haven't got to do any chasing, that's for sure. They got deep pockets. But, yeah, I've been hearing it's been crazy. And, yeah, unfortunately, there haven't been any cameras out there, but I've been hearing little stories.
Okay,
and,
so if a guy wanted some real action, he's gonna go to Southern Indiana.
Well, the Derby was kind of dead this year when it comes to action. I mean, I was out there. I mean, it was all right, but it wasn't all like I had heard of before.
Yeah, this was one of the weakest years for action in Derby, like the last 20 years of Derby, from what I heard.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard the same thing. But no, I mean, Buffs down there in New Orleans and, of course, Griff's in Las Vegas, I think those are the two premier action spots in the country right now. I mean, you got Bogies
and Bogies. I was going to say Bogies, too. That gets an honorable mention.
Yeah, I mean, it's known for one pocket action for sure.
I think Texas is the number one state in the country for one pocket players?
I don't know.
Anywhere from the southern, anywhere from Florida all the way over to Texas is real good.
I love one pocket. And I'm excited to go and see Roberto and Chip matchup. I think it's, you know, we haven't seen Chip since he last played Tony. And we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
And for me, that was Tony when Tony wasn't even Tony, you know? So,
yeah.
And Roberto, for my money, and me and Nate, you know, we were all talking about this earlier, but, I mean, Roberto, for my money, is right on that, like, second-tier one-pocket players to me. You know, he's right outside the Alex and Dennis and Bustamante. So
he's right with you. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I would put Chip in at that same ranking, and we can go back and forth as to what, when, and why, you know, but from what I've seen lately, you know, I'm not talking about their careers in one pocket. I mean, I think Chip's going to go and win that argument. But from what I've seen lately, you know, watching Chip play against Tony, that Chip don't beat Roberto, my money. You know, I don't think he's going to go and outshoot him. I think Roberto can move just as well. I definitely think he can go and bank better than Chip can right now. You know, Chip.
What's the final score?
A little bit more moves. Yeah. I think Roberto's going to win something like 24-19, you know, something like that, maybe 24-18.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. And I mean, so Chip's going to make it a game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the man's going to go and get steamrolled or get robbed or nothing like that because, you know.
No, he's not going to go away.
Yeah, yeah. But you know.
Get some spirit.
Right, of course. And he knows the game, you know. But I want to know what kind of table they're going to be playing on, where they're going to be playing it, because – those things matter, right? I mean, if you're talking about Shane on 4.5-inch pockets, racking your own or with a template, you know Shane's going to go and dominate. I don't care who he's playing. You know, unless he's playing Chang, my money's going to be on Shane, right? So, but you tighten up that table, those conditions don't matter. So I want to know what kind of table they're going to be playing on,
because
that's going to make a bit of difference. But irregardless, though, and I talked to a couple buddies of mine who were like, if they're playing in Oklahoma, I'll bet it even. But if they're playing outside of Oklahoma, I need the game. So, and I think that's more than fair. I mean, I probably won't give it up because I like to get the best of it. But, yeah, I think.
You don't like being on the losing end?
No.
That's odd.
I like my money too much.
A pool player that likes to win.
Yeah. No kidding, right?
Wow.
No, but I really think it's going to be a really good matchup, and it's guys who are hungry, you know.
There'll be games. There'll be good games.
Yeah. But you know what I'm excited for is that I want to know where it's at, because when who did Bustamante play recently in
Tony?
Was it Tony, right?
Yeah,
Tony. Yeah, Tony, right? So Buffs was like action central, man. I mean, everybody was over there. That place was deep full of it. So, I mean, I want to know where they're going to be playing at, because I think where they're going to be playing at, everyone's going to be there. And I think those side games are going to be just as juicy, if not juicier.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. yeah, it's going to be pretty fun. And maybe we're just starved for pool, you know, because you want to see something every week. And maybe that's part of it, but I think it's a really good matchup.
There is something every week right now.
Yeah.
For the most part,
right now, there's but we always want more. You know, I want to see guys. I want to see guys in the mix more. So
yeah, for sure.
But so, I know this matchup's been it's been trying to be had now for a while. I think they postponed it now like 2 or 3 times already. So I think they're both itching to go and play each other. I can't. I know Chip's been playing. I know Roberto's been playing from what I'm hearing on both players. So. Yeah, it'll be a good one, for sure.
Yeah, and basically a lot of the stuff that you said, I basically can echo. I've been saying for a little while now that I think Roberto, for my money, is the fourth best one-pocket player in the world, with the one potential wild card of Joshua Filler, because we've only seen him once, and you know we watched a pretty great performance out of him, so I'd like to see him play. I know Scott Frost kind of chirped up and said that he'd give Josh whatever action he could possibly have. As long as he came to Freezers, and I mean, sure, I won't comment on that further, but I think that I think it'd be nice to see him play against maybe a Scott Frost or a Chip Compton, or maybe even like a Josh Roberts or a Justin Hall or something like that, just to really get a little bit more of a sample size so we can see what Joshua Filler's all about. But until I see a little bit more, it's hard to put him up there in that fourth to fifth category.
For sure.
So. For my money, Roberto is number 4 right now. And I think, Demetrius and I haven't talked about this yet, but we generally, you know, we do our betting together and we try to load up on a side if we really like it. And everything right now is pointing to this one being another load up. I mean, it's like kind of an all-in kind of push it. I think going.
How many games would you give?
I wouldn't give any games, probably. Well, let's put it this way. My prediction is probably closer to 24-17 than it is 24-20. I think it's closer to a blowout than it is a closer match. And I'm not trying to disrespect Chip because I really, really do like his game. It's just, I mean, Roberto Gomez, he's a world-class player, and what he lacks in being, you know, I think Chip has the advantage on moving as far as like knowing the moves in one pocket, but the difference in just pure Q power is just overwhelming. It's really, there is a huge difference between
Q power. That can be a detriment to Roberto's game too. You know, that can be a knock on his game.
It can bite you occasionally.
If the pockets are really tight. If the pockets are like sub 4 inches, I might agree with you there. But even if they're 4.25, I mean, Roberto's used to playing on a pro cut table. I'm not too worried about that one. I think over the long course, I think he's still going to be able to get the best of it.
One thing, when you mentioned Filler, I know it on, there was, when at the end of Tony and Filler, when Scott was around chirping at trying to get a game before the kid left the country, there was some people willing to put him in the box against Scott. And I know that everyone's going to go and say Scott's the favorite. And I heard pros like Shaw and like Melling and everybody else who were like, if that happens, I'll take Scott. They're betting against their fellow European there. You know, and they know the game. You can go and outmove the kid, but you can't leave him an inch. You cannot leave him an inch.
He'll wiggle out of them. He'll wiggle out of that rack with an inch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He can run.
Right. I think, you know, no matter what you call moves or whatever, that the shooters, the guy who pockets the ball better is always, you got to favor him a little bit in every game. You just got to.
Yeah.
No matter how you move, if you don't pocket the ball, you don't shoot again. You know.
Yeah. So I guess we'll leave.
Sayonara, Alan.
Yeah, we'll leave this discussion there. We don't actually know when the match is going to be, but I'm guessing it's going to be early August, sometime in there. And so we'll have this discussion more in depth probably before the actual match starts up. But I just wanted to cover it just to let everybody know that it's on the radar as a match that's going to be happening soon. So from there, we can move on to the end of the podcast. So Rob wants to hang around, so I'll probably just like keep this rolling and let Rob just rant about random things while Mike and I just go and enjoy the rest of our day.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah, I'll pretend I'm home alone.
Yeah. So we have a couple of fan questions, but we're going to skip out on those for now. So we will go to our two tips. We will go back to that for a week. So, Rob, do you want to take it away with that one first, or do you want me to go?
Yeah, just a pool tip. Just a tip. Any kind of tip.
No, I'll leave that to you, fellas. You guys do better with that.
Okay, well, I'll start.
Nate's over there giving lessons out.
Well, he's giving Monday nights. He gives a lesson every Monday night.
Yeah.
I heard. I've seen yeah. That thing looks professional.
Yeah, well, that's what Jay Lataputty will do for you. He'll create a pretty sweet graphic for you.
Yeah, Jay does a good job.
Yeah, he does. He does awesome work. All right, well, I'll start it, Rob. I'll give my tip first. And my tip, in, I guess, conjunction with becoming a partner to the podcast for the next couple of months, is if you have the financial means to do it, get yourself a brake rack. I got mine in on Monday, and I tried it out for the first time last night. And I hit maybe, I don't know, I probably hit about probably 80 brakes in a matter of 30 minutes. And by the end of it, I mean, I was a little winded. It's crazy how much energy actually goes into breaking the balls. But by the end of it, I was planting that cue ball consistently. And my break that night in league was, I mean, I didn't have a dry break. And every single time, more importantly than not having a dry break, is my cue ball was squatted every single time. Just from working on this thing like about 40 minutes, my break had already improved that night. So, I mean, it's a decent amount of money. It's a decent amount of coin, but everybody can look back at that tournament where they broke dry on the hill, and just winning that one more match is going to be extra $300 in your pocket or even more, and it pays for itself just by not breaking dry on that hill. I mean, this is one of the things, especially in pool, that pays for itself almost immediately. So that'll be my tip. If you have the financial means to be able to do it, get yourself a brake rack. It is insane what this will actually do for your game. It can't even be put into words. All right, Rob, go ahead.
Okay, here's this a real short tip, and I'm going to take this away from what I watched Tyler doing today when he was playing Holman, and it's what one of the things that he's really fine-tuned over the last few years, and I'll say instead of a pre-shot routine, you incorporate a post-shot routine, and not post after. You get done shooting and you stand up or anything like that and work away from the table. What I mean by that is a mental picture in your head of what you do after you strike the cue ball. If you can picture a ball on top of a tee, I'll say a golf tee, and you have your hand on the bottom of the golf tee and you wiggle it, to look at the ball and try not to make the ball move. It's the same thing in pool. If you strike the ball, stroke through the ball, and a post shot routine then would be what you do with your eyes, your head, and your hand after you contact the cue ball. And when I watch Tyler, he does the exact same thing every shot. I don't care if he's following the ball, spinning it with right, left, low, drawing it back 4 feet or three cushions. His post strike is just about exactly the same. Very smooth takeaway from the ball. So what's happening is you hear people say all the time, don't jump up. Well, jumping up is a post shot habit and a post shot routine. So it's actually having no post shot routine if you jump up. So try that. To all the players out there, try a little post shot routine. Practice doing something specific with your head, your eyes, or your hand, or your body after you make contact with the ball, and see what happens with your game. See if that helps you pocket balls more. I think it will.
Yeah,
my tip.
A proper follow through is definitely, you know, is definitely something you want to have into your routine for sure. All right, so I guess we are going to have a coach's corner because Demetrius still recorded one and sent it to me. So I guess we will go into that right now.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach's Corner. This is the part of the podcast where I, Demetrius Gelatis, get to share some of my thoughts about how you can try to get your pool game to the next level. So again, you can reach me at info@mnpoolbootcamp.com or visit my website, www.mnpoolbootcamp.com. Minnesota, poolbootcamp.com. to learn more about how I am changing pool players' lives by training them for 3 days and they never see the pool table the same way again. All right, so I have started, this is going to be part two. Part one was last week, and I talked a little bit about, just to recap, that we have to do three things. We have to embrace mental adversity as a part of the game that we enjoy and that we appreciate. We appreciate it because it's challenging, and we appreciate it because it's challenging. It not only does it make the game colorful, but it also allows us to get an edge over our competition. So we appreciate and enjoy and acknowledge the mental game. The second thing we have to do, and this is just a recap from last week, so you can go back and hear that episode, is you have to identify what mental challenges you're up against. And then the third thing is you have to develop a skill set to overcome those specific mental challenges. So embrace the game, identify the challenges, and then overcome them through skills, through mental skills. It's no different. You have to embrace the physical game, identify the problems you're up against, and learn techniques to overcome them. Same thing, except we have to do that with the mental game. So that's the overall. So now I want to talk about identifying. So we've talked about embracing the game. And now I want to talk about, how do we identify the challenges, or when do we know that we're up against mental pressure, and when do we know that we're up against a mental challenge, and how do we start to deal with that? So this is a really easy answer. Anytime you experience negative emotions, that's a sign that you have a faulty perspective. When you are in the zone, when you have a pure state of mind, and you are absolutely in the present, not thinking about the future or the past, or you're not hung up with expectations, you're not hung up with ego, you're not hung up with anything that's like anything but exactly what's going on in the here and now. You just don't have any of these. You're just not you're focused on things that are in the here and now. You're focused on reality, and you're not really thinking negatively. Negative emotions come from faulty expectations and faulty outlooks towards what's going on. And so to answer the question is, how do you know when you're up against a mental challenge? Well, if you're feeling upset, so if you're feeling frustrated, if you're feeling impatient, if you're feeling angry or self-critical, or if you're feeling discouraged and defeated, or anytime you're feeling anything that's not like joyous and calm and content and just, you know, enthralled in the moment, then that's a sign. And if you're feeling negative emotions, so then something's going on. So the first step to identifying it is you recognize that you have a negative emotion. Then you have to say, what is causing this negative emotion? So you ask yourself, how do I feel? Good or bad? If I'm good, I'm fine. If I'm bad, why do I feel bad? Why am I frustrated? Well, I'm frustrated because I just missed that ball. I'm frustrated that I'm losing this match. I'm frustrated that these pockets are playing kind of weird and that these balls are rattling out. I'm frustrated that my opponent's taking forever at the table. I'm frustrated that they're getting some seriously lucky shots. Okay, so now you've identified the thought, you've identified the thoughts that go along with those negative emotions. And now, actually, that's about as easy as that is. That's so easy. I'm not feeling good. Why am I not feeling good? There, you've identified the problem. Now, solving the problem, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over a general blanket strategy that I use. And then in the future episodes, I'm going to be digging in on one-off situations that are serious. So, like, in other words, there are some fairly simple, and there's always, you can never prepare for everything. So there's a lot of things that can come up. And in general, this is going to be my first line of defense that I'm going to use for all mental challenges. From there are some challenges that are so severe and so consistently challenging that I've had to put more thought and more time into them, and I will cover them in future episodes. But for now, I'm going to just give you our blanket strategy, which is, it's probably the opposite. Whatever thought is leading you to be upset, the opposite is probably your way out. So if you're like, oh, I can't believe how slow this guy's playing. Okay, well, whoever said that your opponent always had to play fast with a shot clock? That's not what you signed up for. So whoever told you that he'd play fast, whoever told you that the time that you're in the chair watching your opponent run out would seem to pass quickly and that it wouldn't be taxing, whoever promised that? Like, nobody. That's, where did that expectation come from that you would just get the fast forward like what you do on your practice table, and you miss, you just get to shoot again? Where did that idea come from that that's the way it was? Why not just replace that with the reality, which is that your opponent's going to take time at the table and that it's not always going to be pleasant to watch them scoring points and falling behind in the match, and it's not always going to be it's going to be mentally challenging, and that actually, like we said, we embrace that as a challenge, and that, oh boy, the player that handles themselves in the chair better is going to have an advantage, and that this is part of the game that I took on, and that this actual challenge that I'm having in the chair, trying to keep my thinking positive, is every bit as serious and as important as what I do when I get back to the table. In fact, I'm not playing right now. I am playing right now, and I'm not playing very good, so I need to change my mindset and start playing better, and that starts by accepting that I'm going to be squirming in the chair watching my opponent run out for a while. So let's see how well, the same way when I get to the table, I'm going to say, let's see how well I can run through these balls. Now I'm going to say, let's see how I can navigate through this time in the chair. Like, boom. The opposite is usually true. So another example, oh, I can't believe these balls rattle out. These pockets are so tight. That would have gone on any other table. Okay. Well, whoever told me that I could play on a tight-pocketed gaffy table and play as well as I do on a normal pocketed table? Who told me that if I play on a really slow cloth with really gritty balls that they would never skid, or that the balls would never pick up so much spin off the side rail that they job? Like, where did I get the idea that I could just play on a gaffy tight table with worn cloth and just play perfectly? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And when you examine the ideas, by the way, whenever you examine the ideas that lead to negative emotions, they sound stupid. Like, they sound just flat-out stupid. Like, why would you expect that you could just play the same way on a tight-pocketed table? Why is that frustrating? And that goes back to that rant about how people think that they're going to have more fun when they play better, so then they feel threatened when they don't play well because they think they're going to have less fun, when it's the opposite way around, that you can just have fun right now in the difficult situation, and then it's all good. Basically, it's the it's all good approach, which is what it's all good. And if you don't think it's all good, you're doing it wrong. So then, like, what else? Oh, I can't believe I missed that easy shot. Well, who exactly told you that? I mean, Efren misses easy shots. Filler misses easy shots sometimes. Like, I don't know who gave you the idea that you were going to be a player that never made mistakes. Like, when you challenge the ideas, it's like they're so easy to challenge because they're so obviously wrong. But they don't feel wrong. And people are emotional animals, and so we feel the way we feel. And so you just, I don't know. So for me, first line of defense, I'm not even going to go into it anymore. It's so obvious. When I feel a negative emotion, I know I'm under attack by a faulty belief, and I just identify the thought that's leading me to feel that negative emotion. And once I identify it, it's usually laughably stupid, and I could just say, you know what? No, that's not true. I'm not the kind of player that's going to play and never make a mistake. And I'm not going to play as good on a tight table as I'm going to play on a normal table. And I'm not going to play, you know, I'm not going to just get to fast forward and not have time when my opponent's at the table. And any of these other challenges to come up, fatigue, well, you know, I'm not only going to play at 2 p.m. when I'm wide awake. And I'm not, it's just, whatever it is. Basically, I talk about it's a reality-based approach. I'm just accepting reality. And usually when I'm whiny and negative, it's because I'm denying reality, or I'm upset about reality, or I feel betrayed by reality. And when I can just say, no, actually the reality is the reality, and it's not its job to, you know, adapt to my ideas and expectations. It's my job to let go of my expectations and accept the reality. And so, and make that part of the game, and meet reality on reality's terms, and play on the turf that we're playing on, and whatever negative emotions I'm having. So, okay, so to recap, overall, in episode 1, we talked about how we are supposed to approach the mental game, which is the same as the physical game. Embrace it, learn to identify our challenges, and then learn skills to overcome them. This is episode 2, where we had taken this a step further. We talked about how to identify these mental challenges, which is negative emotions, and then the thoughts that accompany and trigger those negative emotions. And then even a first line of defense, which is to just flat out challenge those negative thoughts or inaccurate thoughts with usually a pretty clear challenge, which is just the opposite is usually true, because otherwise you wouldn't be feeling negatively. Because if you weren't feeling negatively, that's because your version of reality is not being challenged. So when you're feeling negative, it's a sign that your ideas aren't meshing with reality, and it ain't reality that's wrong. In the next episodes, we will look at some specific mental challenges that are very, very, very difficult to shake, and I'm going to zoom in on some additional thoughts on how to take these on and how I prepare for competition. Hope you're enjoying. Again, if you have specific questions, info@mnpoolbootcamp.com. Love hearing from you. Thank you all for supporting the podcast. Have a good day. Play good. Never miss a ball on any kind of equipment ever for any reason. That's unacceptable. Kidding. Bye.
And so there it is.
Okay.
There is another podcast. We are all done.
Okay, everybody. Anybody wants a 9-ball in their front tooth? Let me know. And I will fix you up, and it will fit really good. Trust me. I can make them in
send
my
that
sleep.
Picture, man. I want to see it. I want to see that.
Yeah, Rob, right when we're done with this, you got to send me a picture of that. I got to get that out on the social media. That's funny. So, yeah, we will scoot out from there. And if you want a tooth, talk to Rob. And if you want to guilt trip Mike for not giving you a shout out, make sure to reach out to him and make fun of him for not doing that, so we can get another shout out next time.
Okay, folks.
Next time I'll be ready for the tip.
We slid into this. I'm going to slide out, Nate.
Here we are. So
good job, guys. Yep. I appreciate
Mike,
it.
See you next time, Nate.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, brother.
Take care, buddy.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.